This is The Boy Who Tried, a Star Wars prequel trilogy, Star Wars Legends, Knights of the Old Republic, Jedi Apprentice series, fanfic, written by Searching for Serendipity, and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13 and is Jyn, with additional tags for Alternate Universe, Canon Divergence, The Jedi Exile, Melinda Dawn. Five. There are whispers to be heard, if you know how. In dark crossways, smuggler bars and game houses with bad lighting, tea shops and hollow archives. People listen and take note, and with every telling the legend grows, shifts. There are whispers to be heard about planets at war that shift to peace. Lonely, forgotten planets. The sort where hope withers in a quiet blaze, and Republic help is a myth. About a ship with a strange, motley crew, and the humanoid man-child of a captain, a braided boy that stops storms before they start brewing. There are whispers to be heard. Like all whispers, they have a seed of truth in them. Four. The captain has many names. His people call him that, because the title fits him as well as his worn patched cloak. The wise ones of an isolated forest planet named him Witch Eye. He does not like that title, but his legend wears it well. He has been to his friends, the close ones he inevitably leaves behind. He is the general, the one that stayed behind, the one that endured. Some of the ghosts call him Knight, but that's later. Later. There is a ghost of a monster of a man in black robes that calls him grandson of my grandsons. And his legacy is ash and regret and battered love. No one calls him Padawan. Not even his teachers. That is not as much of a loss as he had thought it would be once. No one remembers Obi-Wan. Most simply call him the Negotiator. His name will be stripped further from his bones one day. Sheared off, like budding drains and titles and bonds are. He will be Exile, the Exile. Vagabond, the Wandering Road Spirit. Even his far-seeing eyes do not see that yet. But they will. They will. Three. Dagobah is hot and heavy. Every inhalation a study in layers. Its gravitational pressure always seems to be a little more than human joints would wish it to be. The sky seems very small under the weaving of lianas and dozens of specimens of swamp ivies, the world a single thrumming life form. The old temple is hard to find, but the boy that is not yet the negotiator, he is patient. War made him that way. If he looks around the corners in search of green, craggy trolls, well, he's young enough to be forgiven some nostalgia. As long as it isn't regret. It isn't. It is. It tries hard not to be. The swamp has grown fat and unrelenting. Tree roots breach crumbling stone, stain unblemished beige in shades of fungus white and fluorescent mosses. Purple and yellow a relief among the green. Once, this structure rose high, breached the treetops in round perfection. These halls were whole and filled with silent meditation. Now they are broken and thriving with abandoned life. It is an ironic trade, but fair, the negotiator thinks. The council chamber is much like its living twin, in the city planet half a galaxy away. The cracks in the stones are older here, a thrumming thinness in the space between breaths that shivers in his lungs. It's almost cold, the power coming from the blade stabbed into the mosaic work, except for that it is hot. The saber shines still. The light is hidden under dust and growing spirals of white Baha'i ivy, peppered with white buds, but it shines. Blue. Like the cloistered sky, like the color of vision threads in the unifying force. The boy is surprised, and then wry, and then pleased. It fits his hand perfectly. And that is not a surprise at all. Two. The ghost comes to him after the last of the peace talks, after the dead are burned in mass fires because they were too tired and the land too unforgiving for graves. It is the first Jedi funeral on Milidadan, soon to gain a new name. The boy had suggested it. The sky is dark with smoke that hurts the voice, bruises the neck. The ghost is a spot of faded white in a landscape of burned gray. Easy to spot. "Did I do the right thing?" he asks. His words are smoke-hurt and small. He is young and alone and grieving. She forgives him this without having to forgive. "I will not say you did the right thing," she responds. "That is for you to decide. I myself never stuck to only one conclusion." "That isn't very helpful," he snarks, because he is young and alive and angry. Hungry. "It is. And so are you. You did something. You tried. That is the truth. You tried." "I tried," he utters, and it's a confession. Too tired to be a defiance. Too weak. Too small. "That is what we do," she tells him. "That is the only lesson I have to give you." The boy that ended the war, and the woman that ended the war, look at the corpses burning over the place where will one day be a peaceful, forgettable city. The fires burn. A little braid burns among the dead. Its loss, a tragedy among many. One. A master and an apprentice yell at each other. Fire rages on around them, hot enough to singe. This is not lava, but blaster fire blasted by hopeless adults towards hopeful children. It burns, regardless. Death always does. And this is a death, a certainty in time. Unwashable, unclean. "I trusted you," the master does not say. He is not the trusting kind, but he has been burned before. this fire and this burning, this heat-wavering distance is not new to him. "You lie," the boy does not say. None of them lie. All of them did. The teachers that told him he would do good without boundaries, the vows of obedience he had trusted and worshipped, the promise of unwavering dedication. There are bodies falling around him, young and familiar and smoking. He knew their names and supported their cause, and yet they fall before his eyes. They did not teach him about that in the crash. The master says something cutting. The student wavers, twitches, does not give ground. A body falls. A sheathed blade lifts dust and ash when it falls. A ship rises, headed towards brighter stars. A tie, new and fragile stark, is cut off. It seems to smoke a little in the air, among the corpses and the exiled boy. Zero. There are whispers. No one listens to them. Until someone does. There are choices. No one takes them. Until someone does. Until someone tries. The end. Reader's notes. I love this. I love it so much. The prose is like this gorgeous, atmospheric, lyrical thing that sketches the outlines and lets your brain fill in all the rest. And the story is basically like, here's the consequence. Let's roll it back to the instigating factor, which is really cool. And basically, the instigating factor is the Jedi told Obi-Wan he could make a difference. When he attempts to do so, here's all the ways that it goes wrong, or slash, not necessarily wrong, but here's how it all... This is the core and the kernel of Obi-Wan's trying to make a change. And when he does so, things differ. And when he does so, more things differ. And here's how he spreads his expanse across the galaxy of influence and positive change, but also hurt and heartbreak. Because I love the idea as Mitra Surik, as Obi-Wan's new mentor. Kind of how, like, an echo of a universe that no longer exists in this universe where ghost Obi-Wan is Luke's mentor. We've got ghost Mitra, but like, oh, she went through shit. She knows about making good choices and still having to live with the consequences, and making bad choices for a good reason, still having to live with the consequences, and that's what Obi-Wan did, and he needs a friend. And Mitra's like, I have several thousand years of hovering in nothingness to impart upon you, and let me help you with that. And then the bit in part 5 at the beginning. I really, for a second, I definitely thought that the dark-robed ghost behind Obi-Wan that calls him Knight was like an echo in the Force of Vader, because dark robes automatically Vader. But if Mitra is his guide, then the one who calls you grandson of my grandsons is Revan, because Revan was, let me tell you about my Revan feels, being the person who put Mitra on the path to where she is now, and so hurtful and good for me, both at the same time, the trauma of it all. And then that moment of, like, in the temple on Dagobah, where Obi-Wan pulls, like, he does a pulls the sword out of the stone kind of moment, and the imagery in my head of this, with all of the sort of what should have been sterile and white, but the rot that's creeping in, but it looks more alive than the thing that it was, that should have been imposing order, like, upon the planet. Like, oh, that whole, the study in contrasts of the falling down Jedi temple, and Obi-Wan basically doing a sword in the stone moment, and, like, christening in his new destiny and shit. Oh. Basically, Searching for Serendipity wrote something beautiful. And I loved it. It was incredible. Thank you for sharing this with me. And hopefully my spin on it is nearly half as good. So yeah, Searching for Serendipity wrote something gorgeous and visceral, and you could feel the like scratchy soot in the air of the corpses burning on Melitodon. And on the one hand, it's like, here is an honor, here is a Jedi funeral, here is what Obi-Wan can bring to the table to start this new life. But also it's like, gray and burning red and the smell of bodies, two concepts that, you know, diametrically opposed on the spectrum, that's the word. So good for me. I loved it. Thank you so much for sharing. Hopefully my take on this is equally as inspiring. And I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. Have a nice day.